think I'm entitled?
You want answers.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
And I could say, you know, Florida State, you know, they're undefeated right now. Why even have the rest of the season? Why even do the college football playoffs? I mean, maybe we should just crown them national champion. That's not the way it works. You've got to earn this. And yes, Donald Trump's gotten a lot of media attention, gets way more than anybody else. I do think there's been sympathy. But I also think as we get closer, voters in Iowa and New Hampshire are going to decide, okay, who do we need to nominate to, one, beat the Democrats at the ballot box, but more importantly, actually deliver victories once you're in office. And I'm the guy that's shown I could do that in Florida. Everything we promised, we delivered. You know, I saw him in Iowa on Sunday, and he was talking about his promise to have Mexico pay for the border wall, probably one of the most famous promises in political history, certainly the centerpiece of his 2016 campaign. And what he said was really startling. He said, you know, people, you know, say Mexico should have paid for the wall, but he said there was no way he could have ever made Mexico pay, and basically admitting that the whole promise was phony from the beginning. So one, I think that that's really bad. I think this is a different guy in 23 than he was in 23. 2016. But the problem, even bigger, you actually could have made Mexico pay. No, they're not just going to cut you a check. You impose fees on remittances from people sending money back to Mexico. That's actually something that his staff said he was interested in doing, and he didn't do it. So that's why he needs to go to these debates. You can't beat the Democrats by running Biden's basement strategy. You owe it to the voters to show up, and you need to defend your record.
Welcome back to Larry Connors USA. That, of course, was a presidential candidate and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis giving his thoughts about, you know, his most formidable competitor in the GOP primary, former President Donald Trump. I'm Susie Moore filling in for Larry today. Appreciate you all tuning in and listening to us. I think that DeSantis makes some good points in that clip. Obviously, you know, it's to his advantage to be able to take on President Trump directly. That is his stiffest competition. If he has a shot, if he's going to have a shot at the nomination, he has to be able to take him on. I can understand the Trump strategy with him being so far ahead in the polling. You know, what does he really gain by participating in the debates and basically drawing the fire of all of the other candidates? So I understand the strategy. I think I tend to lean more into the, yeah, I do think you owe it to the voters, though, to be on the stage and to defend your policies and to elaborate on what you will do if given the chance to once again lead the country. Most of us on the right, I think, have solid affection for the policies that President Trump implemented and aimed to implement during his presidency. It was frustrating to see the headwinds that were that he faced and the obstacles that were placed in his way. And I think that DeSantis did a nice job of pointing out that you can be sympathetic, of course, to the current obstacles that the former president is facing. I mean, you know, we hear talk of lawfare. And he's having everything and the kitchen sink thrown at him while he's attempting to run for president. And think what you will about the various charges and allegations, you know, whether they have merit or don't. Obviously, people have strong opinions about that. And ultimately, those, whether they do or whether they will actually result in financial or potentially incarcerating consequences remains to be seen. But there's no question that pretty much all the stops have been pulled out. And President Trump is drawing fire, a tremendous amount of fire from a number of different quarters. So I guess I can understand, you know, maybe not wanting to add to that and stand up on a stage with people who obviously have their eyes on knocking him out of the way. But it is interesting to the dynamic. Who would have thought, you know, 7 or 8 years ago that we'd be in a situation where it's very likely that the leading contenders for the presidency in 2024 are A, going to be in their late 70s or early 80s, and B, going to be situated such that they may not be holding debates or really forced to directly confront the policies that they have implemented or the policies that they promised to implement. We live in interesting times, and I know that the conventional wisdom is that's probably more of a curse than a blessing, but there's no doubt about it. You know, it's interesting. We've had two presidential debates now for the GOP, and there hasn't been a ton of movement amongst the contenders other than President Trump. He's still way out ahead of the pack. And then, you know, the second, third, fourth place have all kind of been hanging in that 10, 11, 12% range. No one has really broken out or distinguished themselves to really break away from the rest of the pack. And in fact, while DeSantis has really been focusing a lot on Iowa, which is where the caucuses are held, and I think that's the first contest that we're going to see going into the new year, he's slid a little bit in New Hampshire. And in fact, Nikki Haley, former governor of South Carolina, former secretary to the UN or UN ambassador, she has now pulled into the lead, behind Trump, of course, in New Hampshire. Let's see, we had an article yesterday, shows that in, the latest polling out of New Hampshire, she has pulled ahead, I'm trying to find the number here. And there was a lot of discussion about whether or not her performance at the second debate would help or hinder her. She certainly came out aggressive. She definitely wanted to make everybody know that she had sharp elbows, and she wasn't afraid to mix it up with the rest of the bunch there. And I think some people, even people maybe who are fans of Nikki Haley, thought, well, that might have been just maybe a little too much, might have turned people off. But apparently not people in New Hampshire, because as of this latest poll, she has, it's a USA Today Boston Globe Suffolk University poll, and it shows her with 19% of likely voters. And then her next closest competition is Ron DeSantis, who is back at 10%. Of course, you know, President Trump is up there at 49%. Bottom line is, it's going to be interesting to see which, if any, of these candidates is ever going to be able to break out of that dynamic and really compete effectively with President Trump. You know, I think at this point he's kind of taking the position that they should just forego any further debates, which of course he would, because that's to his benefit. And as DeSantis pointed out in that clip that we heard, you know, that's like saying, okay, well, we've won five of our games. Mizzou's right now undefeated. They've won. They're 5-0. So should we just say, hey, the season's over? no use having any more competitions. It's just a done deal. I don't think anyone who's an avid sports fan would take that position. That kind of takes the fun out of it. And politics is kind of a team sport in certain ways. So, I tend to lean more with I don't think we should just cancel the debates and call it a done deal. I think we as voters are owed a little bit more. And it's going to be interesting to watch it all shake out. I know one of the things that I'm really trying to keep an eye on and learn more about is the caucus process, since we are only doing a caucus in Missouri this year and not doing a primary on top of that. Most of us are used to participating in the primary and just going and casting a vote like we would normally, but that's not what we're going to do in Missouri this year. We've always had caucuses too, but those were kind of less well publicized and less well attended, and I've not participated in one. And so if you want to have your vote heard this year in terms of the GOP primary, you're going to have to go out and get involved and actually attend a caucus. And I'm hoping and assuming that in the coming months and weeks, we're going to learn a little bit more about that process and where specifically each of us is to go if we want to participate. But that's going to make things a little different. It's going to make a little different dynamic here in Missouri. And meanwhile, of course, you know, we're still waiting to see what's going to happen up on Capitol Hill. We've talked a little bit already about who's going to be the next speaker now that Kevin McCarthy has been ousted. Will it be Steve Scalise? Will it be Jim Jordan? In fact, yesterday, Karine Jean-Pierre was asked what the president's relationship is with Jim Jordan, and here's what she had to say.
Let's frame the nature of President Biden's relationship with Jim Jordan.
Look, the president has been vice president. He's been senator, right? He has many, many relationships with members of the Republican Party in the House and the Senate, more specifically. Just not going to get into characterizing specific relationships that he has. But the president has been known for a long time to work in a bipartisan way and have pretty good relationships with Republicans in Congress. I'm just not going to get into every member of Congress and his relationships with them.
You do have to wonder, does he have a preference? I know that at times Joe Biden has worked in a bipartisan way, more so when he was a senator. I don't think we've seen as much of that from him as the president. Maybe that's just the nature of the office and the times that we live in. But certainly there were times when I know that Kevin McCarthy was calling on Biden to work with him and communicate with him, and there was some breakdown of the communication there. And I don't know whether we'll see that different. Will that look different if it's Steve Scalise or Kevin Hearn or Jim Jordan in that role? I guess we'll have to wait and see how that all plays out. In the meantime, you know, President Biden was himself asked yesterday what he thought about it and what he thought should happen or what advice he might have for the next Speaker of the House. Here's what he had to say.
Whether or not they're asking, what's your advice to the next House Speaker?
That's above his pay grade. It's kind of an interesting interpretation, interesting approach to it. I think he was probably just being a little bit, you know, telling a little bit of a joke there. But even so, it does kind of raise the question about, what's this going to look like? What's the dynamic going to be? Will Joe Biden be able to work with whoever takes on that role next? And, you know, he's got other things to worry about. We do need to kind of change things up a little bit here and talk about some of the other issues he's got going on at the White House.
There are some new pictures of Commander Biden biting a staffer again. How many times has that dog bitten the Biden?
I would refer you to the Secret Service and also the First Lady's office.
Okay. It's the 12th known incident of this dog biting a White House staffer. A lot of times when that happens, there's a lawsuit. Isn't the president worried about getting sued?
I would refer you to the Secret Service or the First Lady's office.
She's going to refer you elsewhere. Karine Jean-Pierre is not going to tell us anything more about the bite situation. Yes, that's right, folks. Commander has once again struck and has bitten somebody else at the White House. This time, I think it was not a Secret Service agent. It was an aide, and that makes the 12th time that we know of that Commander, who I think is only 2 years old, has bitten somebody. Most of the bites apparently have not been serious bites, although one agent was sent to the hospital. I'm a dog lover. I have a dog. I've almost always had dogs. I volunteer at a dog shelter. There are times when we have difficult dogs, dogs with some temperament issues, dogs that maybe aren't well suited for, you know, certain settings, and I can certainly imagine that the White House is a somewhat chaotic and maybe a difficult setting for a dog that's perhaps sensitive to a number of people coming and going, that sort of thing. But as a former lawyer, I can tell you that the concept of dog bites in the law is you get one free bite. In other words, if your dog happens to bite somebody and they have never shown that aggression before, it's probably going to be one of those things that's just chalked up to the nature of the beast and it may not really turn into much. But if your dog has shown those signs before and has had issues and you've nevertheless put them in a situation where they were able to bite and harm somebody else, you're probably looking at a stiff, you know, legal bill. Lawsuits are filed. I've tried dog bite cases. They're not easy cases to try. And it's one of those things that you kind of have to blend being an animal lover and a pet lover with the recognition that dogs can be dangerous and they can cause harm. And particularly if they're not well trained or if they're in a setting or situation that's not comfortable for them, clearly Commander is not comfortable at the White House. The good news for Commander is that he is no longer at the White House. NBC News reported late yesterday that he has since been removed. I'm not sure exactly where they've sent him, and the Secret Service is remaining pretty mum about the situation, but he is no longer going to be there at the White House. I don't know if they're going to try and replace him with yet another German Shepherd or another dog, or maybe just try and give that a little bit of a break. I know I did see a clip of President Biden himself walking the dog on a leash, kind of maybe coming off of, I think it was Marine One, and having a little difficulty, you know, keeping the dog under control. As someone who regularly is having to walk large dogs on a leash, I would be a little hesitant to have a large dog on a leash with somebody who may not be steady on their feet and may not be in full command of that dog. So perhaps it's for the best, although I'm sure he will be missed by the Biden family. But, you know, I think at the 12th bite, you really have to start worrying about whether or not this is going to end up with someone seriously harmed and or potential lawsuits. So, so long, Commander. We knew you well. It's not just dogs that President Biden has struggled with. His difficulty with, you know, speaking off the cuff and even reading off the teleprompter has kind of been well publicized. And it's not just focused on by people who share different views or don't share his political views. It's noticed by people who voted for him. I can attest to that firsthand, having spent a lot of time recently with people who are Democrats and Biden voters. They're not really enthralled with him, too. Yesterday, he once again showed us that he's got a little trouble reading off the teleprompter.
You can sign up for the SAVE plan at studentaid.gov/save. studentaid.gov/save.
I don't know why. I don't know why his aides have him try and read things like that off the teleprompter to begin with. Those are sure to trip him up. But it's troubling, of course, when you see him faltering with things like that, and just kind of highlights the fact that he is 80 and he is kind of showing a decline. And a lot of people are questioning not only whether he should be on the ticket in 2024, but whether he really can. Can he really maintain, first of all, the responsibilities that he currently has, but secondly, campaigning, and can he do so effectively and be an effective spokesperson for and representative of the Democratic Party? He can't really represent the future of the Democratic Party, but then that puts things sort of in a pickle, because if he were to step down, then it's Kamala Harris, and she's got her own issues with popularity and people not 100% sure that she's up to the task. She certainly really hasn't acquitted herself well as vice president, hasn't really shown that sort of initiative and leadership quality that I think people would like to see in their president, regardless of their gender or their race or anything else. You want to know that whoever has the job is up to it. And there's, of course, lots of speculation going on as to what we'll see come November of 2024. Will it really be Joe Biden on the ticket, or will it be someone totally different, like perhaps Gavin Newsom, governor of California? When we come back, we're going to be talking to another friend of mine, Roxanne Hoag. She's a California resident, and I know she has some thoughts not only about her governor, his potential presidential run, his recent appointment to the Senate, in the state of parental rights in California. So stick around. We're going to be coming back right after this. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
I want to share something special with you. I've told you how Wellington Environmental works to keep hospitals, schools, businesses safe for their patients, students, clients, employees. Wellington can do the same for you. Perfect example. A relative went to the basement, almost knocked over by the smell. A sewer line had broken. A call to Wellington, a crew was dispatched. First thing, make the home safe. Then clean up the mess. Truly clean it up. Now, I'm telling you this because I want the best for you. Wellington Environmental. Here's the number, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
Talk radio made in St. Louis.
Very excited for what you guys are doing for the St. Louis community.
For St. Louis.
Relevant local talk.
Saying what we are thinking.
This is News Talk STL.
You guys are awesome. I love you. And it really, it's a tremendous honor to be on the station.
News, analysis, and opinion.
Thanks for covering the local and global.
Oh, people, this is America.
We better open our eyes.
Really local, really good.
News Talk STL at 101.9, 94.1 and NewsTalkSTL.com.
As a truck driver, I've learned how important road safety is. I know that large trucks need more time and room to stop. That's why I always hang back and follow other vehicles at a safe distance. Everyone can help keep our roads safe. Next time you're driving, try to remember to always give trucks extra space when you merge in front of them. Let's all plan to share the road safely. Learn how at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
This is Christina Strait with Strait Realty reminding you why pay more than four. In 2003, we had a dream to start a real estate company that would revolutionize the real estate market. Now, 20 years later, after navigating through the many markets' ups and downs, we know exactly how to help you in this challenging time. I'm Christina Strait, owner of Strait Realty. Don't give away your hard-earned equity. Give us a call today, 314-441-4444, 314-441-ALL-4s. And remember, why pay more than four?
Strait Realty is a licensed broker in the state of Missouri.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back to Larry Connors USA. Susie Moore filling in for Larry today, and I'm really excited to talk to my next guest, Roxanne Hoag. She may not work directly with me at Red State, but she kind of does by proxy. Her husband is a copy editor and works with me, and I know that Roxanne helps keep a keen eye on what's going on the site and on the key issues that we're covering. She's also an actress, she's a mother of four, and she's a parental rights advocate in California. Roxanne, it's so good to talk to you.
Susie, it's so great to talk to you. I'm so excited that I'm a Red Stater by proxy. I'm going to put that on my...
Definitely are. And we very much appreciate that, let me tell you. I really appreciate you joining me today, too, because I wanted to talk with you about, there's been a lot of developments in the news lately, just kind of that have to do, they're either California, directly California related or California adjacent. But one of the biggest items of news in the past few days is the fact that Senator Dianne Feinstein passed away, and her replacement was not only selected by your good governor, Gavin Newsom, but has already been sworn in, Miss LaFonza Butler. What do you know about LaFonza?
Well, it's incredibly lucky for LaFonza. She didn't really have very far to go to get sworn in because she doesn't live in California.
Isn't that funny?
It was just a hop, skip, and a jump for her from Maryland to the Capitol, pretty much a really easy drive. And I just find it amazing that Gavin Newsom thinks there are no black gay women in California.
she's the only one, and she's not even in California. What the heck?
Yeah. Well, as many people have pointed out before me, I guess to have a true representative in the Senate, you need to have a Californian who left the state because of Gavin Newsom and the Democrats' terrible policies. So if that's that way, sure. We have a good Senate.
Well, that's a very good point. I don't know that it speaks particularly well of the good governor, but I did think it interesting. I was not really familiar with her, and when her name first came up, I thought, first of all, I don't know who that is, but secondly, clearly he didn't want to get into the middle of the Senate race that's heating up for 2024, because you all have several contenders for that.
Yes, but he did. So his initial, Emily Hoven wrote this great article saying basically he is just his instincts are so bad, he keeps boxing himself into corners and then having to get out. He's the one who said, I'm going to nominate a black woman. He's the one who said, I'm going to nominate a caretaker, someone who won't run for the full term.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? He backed out of that before he made the announcement. So LaFonza is totally open to running. So the people The people certainly that are Democrats, who had already declared that they're running are not too happy with Gavin.
Oh, I'm sure not. You know, I was a little surprised, you know, if he was going to do the check the identity box thing, that he didn't just go ahead and pick Barbara Lee, because obviously she's one of the main contenders for that. But I wonder if Barbara was surprised by that.
Oh, Barbara was very surprised. I think what people need to understand about the horrible corruption in the country writ large, but also California, which is where the infection often starts, is that LaFonza is the perfect candidate, not just because of identity politics, not just because of her complete devotion to the sacrament of abortion, but her twin towers of fundraising acumen and a little known thing she did before, which was to work very closely with SEIU, the Service Employees International Union. Public sector unions are destroying the country the best they can, and nowhere are they more powerful than in California. So she has all the bona fides for team destruction.
I gotcha. So is this in part a play by Gavin Newsom to secure his good graces with the public sector unions, because we all know that he's just waiting for the moment to throw his hat in the presidential ring?
Well, as I call it, he has been on the Biden Death Watch tour. I have a little tour poster on my Twitter page. He is just waiting to slide into the DMs of anybody who dares to suggest that Biden step down. He's shoring up, as someone pointed out, first in the nation primary. One of them is in South Carolina, and black women make a huge difference there. And it's just, he's gross and grotesque, but a creature like an AI made governor, right? Like, he is the perfect result of everything that we've had to date, right? You got good looking, you got the hair gel, you got the smooth, you got the pretty wife, you know, ignore all the indiscretions and the likely addiction issues and the being held up by the Getty family and, you know, not having to follow any of the laws that he puts forth. But he looks good, he speaks smoothly, and if he's willing to placate every one of his real Democrat constituencies, public sector unions, minorities, and people who think that minorities can't possibly survive without someone giving them a leg up, well, then he's your guy.
Well, I certainly think that those of us who've been observing, you know, kind of have, we're just waiting for it to happen. And one of the things that his administration has really been doing lately is taking on parents and school board issues. Anybody that doesn't seem to want to toe the Democrat or progressive line when it comes to education. And I know you are an advocate for parents' rights. And wanted to talk with you a little bit about that in the few minutes that we have left. I know that there's a lawsuit going on right now between Los Angeles parents and the County Department of Public Health, and there was some big news out of that recently.
Yes, so I'm one of the plaintiffs. We're just a bunch of, you know, I'm sure that the county's $850 an hour external lawyers thought we were just a bunch of PTA moms. But if you want something done, ask a PTA mom. And we're going to trial on October 16th in the free speech actions. Our attorney, Julie Hamill, is also a mom. We saw our children and our friends' children be devastated by the completely onerous and unscientific restrictions placed on school children in the county of Los Angeles, a county of 10 million people, by Barbara Ferrer, the unelected appointed health officer who's not actually a medical doctor. And we watched all this while Gavin's children, as all children should, got to attend school in person. By the way, in Los Angeles County, people don't get this, Barbara Ferrer shut down private schools. So private schools were $45,000, $50,000 a year, and those children could not attend.
Oh, my word.
For a full year, over a year, right? Because they said, if you switch classes, so anyone older than 12, you know, in middle school, you start moving from classroom to classroom. That was it. And those consequences and the repercussions are going to be long-lasting.
Yeah.
Really devastating to people. And not only did Gavin, you know, go to the French Laundry when he told everyone to stay home, not only was he unmasked in SoFi Stadium, when we had a mask mandate here, but he claimed his kids were doing Zoom school, but they were merrily attending school, again, as all kids should have been. So our action is set for trial on October 16th, and we are really looking forward to it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I saw, just briefly an overview, it's a challenge to, it's basically a First Amendment challenge, right? Basically yes. Saying that the Department of Health not only refused to allow people to comment on their, I guess, social media, but also tried to shut down your organization's Twitter feed.
Yeah, so they, our initial cause is a writ of mandate. I've only played a lawyer on TV. I'm an actor.
That's okay.
So I have never. but we had causes of action for actually on the merits, right? Mm-hmm. Of the mask mandate, close contact rule, of all these things. Those were all dismissed because, of course, they're just following orders from the CDC. I'll know is corrupt and wrong. But what remained is the free speech action. So yes, the county, which is a government, I mean, I just really wish all government employees and bureaucrats would just get a little copy of the Constitution. It's right there, First Amendment. But we're not even suing on First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution grounds. California's Constitution has even stronger free speech protections. And that's what our case is about.
Fantastic. I did note, I briefly looked at the, there was a summary judgment motion that was ruled on earlier this week. Basically, the county was trying to say, hey, look, even if you take the facts that the plaintiffs are putting in front of you, we're still entitled to judgment in our favor as a matter of law. The judge kindly disagreed with them, and I did have a chance to look over that order, and I noted that he, in doing so, relied in part on the Missouri versus Biden case, which is a big, obviously, free speech First Amendment case that's coming up, you know, that's being played out on the national level. But I did find it sort of gratifying to see a California judge sort of glomming onto that rationale and applying it to your case.
It was quite delicious, I have to say, because the way we've been treated and what people need to understand, because I, you know, again, not a litigator, so I was like, hate lawyers, sorry.
No offense taken.
Very useless, but they just cost money, you know. We brought this to get our children to breathe freely.
Yeah.
That was it. We made multiple settlement offers to the county. And by the way, LA County, with its now almost $50 billion budget, operating budget, regularly settles cases in millions of dollars when people trip over sidewalks that they don't maintain, when they claim that they were able to live on Venice Beach and shoot up, right? They settle these all the time. They refused to settle this, and our settlement offers were this.
Wow.
Please rescind the mask mandate for kids, since it's rescinded for everyone else. That was it.
Wow.
At once, we asked for fees for copying and filing. So we're not after anything other than freedom.
Yeah.
That adults had. And it has been very gratifying to have someone sort of understand. And what, you know, again, the county has thousands, hundreds of lawyers in their legal department, but they went to outside counsel, which is very expensive. And you always think as a layperson, wow, these guys would be amazing. And so far, they have turned out to be really just sort of bullies. My deposition, the lead lawyer spent the entire time trying to read my personal home address into the record.
Roxanne, I'm sorry to cut you off. We're running out of time here, but real quick, can you tell people where they can follow along and follow you on social media?
I am on Twitter. All my other social media is for my kids. So I'm on Twitter as Roxanne Hogue, R-O-X-A-N-N-E-H-O-G-E. And then laparents.org is where we post every single legal document, every single document, every single document.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This time of year, heavy rains, high winds, they can hit. And if you have any loose shingles, even the smallest hole in your roof, you're taking a major gamble with your biggest investment. I can tell you from personal experience, do not wait until you have water where it shouldn't be. Don't forget that John Beale has disaster crews, which can at least cover your roof until the damage can be fully repaired. Homeowner, business owner, call John Beale, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. Ackerman Toyota has the 2024 models. You're going to be impressed. Check them out in person at Ackerman Toyota, Hampton and Interstate 44. In fact, you've got to see the 2024 Toyota Sequoia. Very impressive. This is the time to buy and get top dollar for your vehicle. Looking for pre-owned? Ackerman Toyota can also help you. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. AckermanToyota.com. Ackerman Toyota for life. This is a scary time when it comes to your money, especially if buying a home. That's why you need Homestead Financial Mortgage. I know the owners, met the team. You can trust Homestead will be with you every step of the way. Call 24/7 with any question or concern. Homestead is on your schedule, not banker's hours. This is not just about buying a home. It's about trust. You can go to my website, larry.homesteadfinancial.com. larry.homesteadfinancial.com.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
If you like premium cigars and whiskey, I've got the perfect place. Lit Cigar Lounge, now open in its new space in the district, just off Highway 40 in Chesterfield. Lit Cigars for anyone who enjoys great cigars, whiskey, bourbon, tequila. Ladies, that includes you. Leather seating, numerous big screen TVs, special events featuring live music and tastings. More details at litstl.com. litstl.com. Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield.
Well, I started out with $1 gambled with a man and I want me another. Bought me a gun and I robbed my brother. I'm bad, but I don't care, boys. I'm gonna be a millionaire.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
The DA calls it individual justice and says everyone involved in the looting will be looked at on a case-by-case basis.
We'll look carefully to see whether this is a one-off situation and they're fundamentally law-abiding people, hold them accountable one way, or whether they are criminals and they're all about taking advantage of some sort of unrest for their own benefit and they will be prosecuted another way.
Or whether they are criminals. We're going to look at people that are criminally charged and decide whether they are criminals. That's an interesting approach to it, I would say. You're listening to Larry Connors USA. I'm Susie Moore filling in for Larry today. That soundbite stuck out to me, but I think it's emblematic of what we're seeing in a lot of our major cities. You've got DAs and prosecutors who are, you know, of the social justice mindset, which, you know, may have its merits in some regards, but first of all, I would say that probably each criminal case is taken on a case-by-case basis and should be, but the law should still be applied equally and people should be treated equally under the law. There's been a ton of unrest in Philadelphia, particularly of late. We've seen the scenes of the kind of out-of-control rioting and looting and people just kind of running in and taking stuff out of, you know, Lululemon and the Apple Store and all kinds of stuff going on. And I think that was what that prosecutor was speaking to. But I did think it was really interesting that he made a point of making that distinction between people who this was just sort of a one-off thing for versus, you know, I guess what he was trying to say was people who were career criminals. I would submit that if your one-off impulse is to go running along with the mob and steal stuff, you know, I don't know that you can just be sort of dismissed out of hand. Certainly, one of the things that prosecutors do and should look at when they're determining whether or not they're going to work out a plea deal or what sort of punishment is going to be meted out by the court is whether or not somebody is a persistent offender. If this is somebody who has a clean criminal record and has never done, you know, been accused of or convicted did have a crime previously, then I would assume they would get more lenient treatment than somebody who's done this on a repetitive and regular basis. Nevertheless, the sort of, almost willingness to say, well, you know, people just kind of get caught up in things and, you know, the next thing you know, you're stealing stuff from Lululemon. It just happens. It's interesting, and it's interesting that it's sort of an accepted point of view At least for some criminal behavior. It's not an accepted point of view, I guess, at least for people on the left, if this involves perhaps being at the Capitol on January 6th. Now, I want to be really clear about something. There were people there on January 6th, 2021, who committed crimes and needed to be prosecuted and treated accordingly. But it seems as though in a sort of overzealous attempt to really make a point about those who would question our government and who would support former President Trump or question whether the 2020 election was actually on the up and up, a very wide net was cast, and there are people who were prosecuted for what this prosecutor might refer to as a sort of a one-off. You know, they wandered into the Capitol. We saw the scenes that day. There were disturbing scenes, too, but there were also the people that were just kind of wandering through like they were on a tour. And yet all of those people are being prosecuted and very thoroughly. And, you know, a lot of them are having the book thrown at them. So I do think it's interesting that we seem to have this standard of, well, we're going to let some of this slide when it comes to sort of looting, rioting, that sort of thing, but not when it comes to protesting the government and questioning whether or not our elections are, you know, the integrity of our elections are being upheld. Kind of an interesting contrast there. But speaking of Philadelphia, there was an interesting article that came out of that we published at Red State yesterday. My colleague Ward Clark wrote about it. One of the business owners in Philadelphia has decided to sort of take matters into his own hands or into their own hands, and they have now hired armed guards to patrol the exterior of their business. I think it's Thursday through Sunday. It's like mostly the weekend. But this is a, believe it or not, Philly cheesesteak shop, Jim's West Steaks and Hoagies. And it's such a popular location and destination that people are often standing outside it. There's a line that will kind of wrap around the building. And in order to keep their patrons safe and keep their business going, they've resorted to hiring an armed guard who will patrol the exterior of the facility and make sure that the people in line are kept safe from, you know, criminals, thieves, people who are maybe not mentally well, people who mean to do bodily harm to others. It's kind of a sad commentary. I know I watched, there was a video clip about it that had people, you know, giving their thoughts on it. So most people were pretty much in favor. Most of the customers thought it was a good idea. They appreciated it, and they were on board with it. A couple people didn't like the fact that the person had kind of a scary looking rifle. It's kind of come to that. And, you know, I think that they kind of echo the feelings of many Americans who are basically fed up with crime. And we've heard them express that.
Crime out of control in every city in America.
I fear for my own safety every moment.
We shouldn't have to be teaching stop, drop, and roll on the ground, you know, from bullets.
The world is going crazy. I feel like people are just going insane. So at this point, we just got to stay home.
It's kind of a sad conclusion that young lady came to. At this point, we just got to stay home. But, I mean, I think that's how a lot of people feel. They don't feel safe when they are out and about. They feel like, you know, there's a lot of threats out there. And, you know, obviously, the police can't be everywhere, even when they are supported by their municipalities. And so people are fed up, and you're starting to see that, and you're starting to see the way that they react to that. And, you know, I mean, we keep seeing example after example. Just over the weekend, a congressman was carjacked, Henry Cuellar was. And, you know, I don't know that there's any easy answers to it, but I certainly think that the people that were advocating for, you know, defunding police and reimagining how what we do criminal justice may be being shown in real time that their methods and their approaches aren't necessarily the most helpful. I want to shift things a little bit, though, here and talk in the last few minutes about a recent court decision that has to do with our First Amendment rights.
Security agency, that's a mouthful, also known as CISA, likely violated the First Amendment when it encouraged tech and social media companies to suppress or remove election-related posts. thanks to a lawsuit brought by my next guest, CISA is now blocked from doing any of that. Joining me now is Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. Mr. Attorney General, thanks for joining us. The Washington Post framed it as the agency was just trying to protect elections from online hoaxes. But what was this really
about? Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah, we're fighting to protect our First Amendment right to free speech. These are D.C. swamp rats that inhabit the sewer of the administrative state. By the way, there is no room in our constitutional structure for administrative state. It's a sewer of D.C. swamp rats, and they're gnawing at our freedom. And we've seen them be weaponized against President Trump. Certainly, we know that CISA worked with the FBI to suppress the Hunter Biden laptop story in the fall of 2020 and the lead up to the 2020 election. That's election interference at its worst, and the American public suffered for it. And it's certainly being weaponized against President Trump today as well, and we're moving into another election cycle. We've got to build a wall of separation between tech and state. This lawsuit's our best way of doing that, and we're going to keep fighting to protect all of our right to free speech.
Well, what other government agencies do you think are involved in this social media censorship?
Well, it's a vast censorship enterprise that starts at the White House. It moves across the Department of Justice to the FBI, the CDC, the Surgeon General, and now the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA. Think about that for just a second. This is an agency that is intended to protect computer databases and bridges. And yet the director of CISA has said that there is neurological infrastructure as well. She wants to control what you think, what you say, what you hear. And they're doing that on big tech by censoring us. We know through this lawsuit that federal officials forced big tech to change their censorship algorithms, and Americans suffered and are suffering now because they're self-censoring. The harm wasn't a once-in-time thing. People are less likely to talk about President Trump, less likely to talk about COVID
issues
because they're afraid of being kicked off the platform.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's never been about truth.
I mean,
it's always been about power.
It's the gagging of America. That's what they want. Intimidate, surveil, and ultimately silence.
The gagging of America. I think that's pretty apt. That, of course, was our Missouri Attorney General, Andrew Bailey, talking to Laura Ingraham, I believe it was last night, about a recent additional victory that they've had in the Missouri versus Biden litigation. A little bit of a rundown on that real quick. Of course, that originally was filed by Eric Schmidt when he was our attorney general before he became senator, along with Louisiana. And it was challenging the Biden administration and many of the agencies that were basically working hand in hand with big tech, with Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and such, and basically using them as a proxy to squelch Americans' First Amendment rights. Thankfully, we had some AGs that decided to challenge them on this, and the lawsuit was filed on 4th of July. Judge Terry Dowdy out of New Orleans, Louisiana District Court, ruled that they couldn't do this, and basically implemented a sweeping injunction that limited the ability of a number of government agencies to interact with or direct the decisions of these platforms in terms of censoring and quieting the voices of people that were using those platforms. That was a huge, huge victory, and appropriately on the 4th of July. Of course, the government appealed, and it went up to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. The panel there agreed, actually, that the government had violated Americans' First Amendment rights with these actions and activities, with these coordinations, with these big tech platforms. And they agreed with limiting those, but they narrowed the scope of the injunction quite a bit. And they excluded some of the agencies from it. It still covered the White House and a number of related agencies, I think the Surgeon General. But it excluded CISA, which is under the DHS heading, and this recent ruling that Andrew Bailey was talking about really the states petitioned the court and asked them to add CISA back onto this injunction, and the court agreed. So that is another big victory for free speech, and we're going to have to see ultimately. I'm sure the case is going to end up at the Supreme Court. But at a minimum, it should be a warning to government agencies, whether they be federal, state, or local, that they really need to be mindful of citizens' First Amendment rights, and they shouldn't be coordinating with any outside actors and using them as proxies to squelch those rights. So that's a big victory, and one that we were, you know, I'm watching closely. I think those of us who have kind of been in the free speech sphere and being very aware of it, keeping a very close eye on. I will also say this, as somebody who works in media now, you know, we've felt this firsthand at Red State. This is something that we deal with on a daily basis. There is always the threat of demonetization. There is always the threat of being deplatformed. There is always the threat that if you write the wrong thing and use the wrong keywords, some outside entity that perhaps has a different leaning in their politics and their agenda will get to the censors and say, hey, you know, they shouldn't be allowed to be saying this. This is bad. It's unhealthy. It's dangerous and derogatory. Those are the keywords that are used. And before you know it, boom, an article's dinged. And you get enough of those dings and you're deplatformed and you're demonetized, or you've got advertisers who are leery of advertising with you. And it's not because of what most objective people would look at and say, oh, this is dangerous, this is derogatory. It's because this is a different opinion. This is a different viewpoint than what we want to be espoused. The tentacles of this reach very, very deeply into our everyday lives. It plays a big role in the information and media that we consume, and people don't even always realize that's what's going on. But that's something that I think we all need to be aware of. You know, when you're feeling constrained, when you're moderating, I mean, we should all use tact and consideration when we're interacting with people, I think. But when you're moderating what you're saying and you're limiting it and intentionally not using certain words, not because they're bad words or mean words, but because they're words that you know are going to trigger censorship of some sort. You know, you're doing their job for them. It's not even their job. You're doing you're helping them achieve their goals, and that is to quiet you and silence you. And so, kudos to A.G. Bailey and to the AG from Louisiana for taking on this fight, for continuing this fight and taking it as far as it needs to go. I'm optimistic that when it does reach the Supreme Court, we'll see some favorable rulings in relation to it as well. But it's one of those things that we all have to kind of be on the lookout for, because unfortunately, I guess the nature of government is such that, you know, people amass power and then they want to hold on to that power. So their approach to things is to try and silence people who would disagree. And, you know, we don't want that. We want to be able to appreciate our First Amendment right and to speak freely and to debate and discuss things civilly, cordially, but to actually have this marketplace of ideas that is open and allows people to speak their views and to do so, you know, in support of, I don't know, a working society, one that allows people to have different viewpoints and to live, to coexist even with those different viewpoints, and to rely on a system of governance that, you know, kind of relies on our foundational principles. So I'm sorry, I'm waxing long on that one, but this is an area that really is meaningful to me and really hits home, because I see on a daily basis the efforts of those in power to quiet voices that disagree with them. We don't want that. It's one of the things about News Talk STL. It's a voice for conservative viewpoints, and we appreciate you listening to it for sure. You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Again, you can hear a broadcast 6 p.m. on News Talk STL, and you can view the stream on Facebook, Twitter, and Rumble.